Welcome to the radio ministry of Clearview Church in Henderson, where our goal is to make Christ visible. Clearview is a place of genuine worship with ministries for all age groups and all peoples. For more information, visit us at 3485 Oxford Road in Henderson, or visit us online at clearviewbc.org. Now join us for this week's message by Pastor Abadon Shaw.
Many of us have heard the name Vince Lombardi, famous football coach. He was known for his die-hard determination to win in the face of incredible odds. And there are a lot of stories about him, because he had a big ego as well. But there was one where he was in the championship playoffs, and for some reason his wife Marie could not go to the game, and it really disappointed him. Of course, Green Bay won. He was on cloud nine. He got home and tried to quietly slip into his bed, but his cold feet touched her legs. And she kind of exclaimed sacrilegiously, "God, your feet are cold." To which he instantly replied, "When we're in bed, just call me Vince." In the message, we're going to learn why love and pride cannot go together. We're in our series from 1 Corinthians 13, and the message today is called Love is Serving. Starting in verse 4, love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself, is not puffed up. Does not behave rudely. We're going to see this in the weeks to come. Does not seek its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil. Does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. Bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. And now abide faith, hope, love. Faith, what we believe about God, what we believe about life. Hope, that God will work all things together for good, and in the end he has the new heavens and new earth prepared for us. But love, the greatest of these is love. Now once again, keep in mind, Paul wrote 1 Corinthians to the Christians in Corinth. Corinth was a Roman colony in Greece. It was populated by freed slaves, people who had won their freedom. When you think about slaves, don't just immediately think Africa. There were slaves even from Britannia. There were slaves from other parts of the world who, for either through their work or payment or their masters, had set them free. They were the citizens of Corinth. Who else was in Corinth? Army veterans. They had fought in Britannia. They had fought in Egypt. They had fought in Persia. But now they had made Corinth their home. Who else was in Corinth? Well, old Greek families. Their roots were deep into the Greek soil. Unlike the freed slaves, unlike the Roman veterans from the army, these were the original Greeks. Who else was in Corinth? Business people. Remember, Corinth has two seaports, so a lot of money was coming in. A lot of business tycoons were there. Laborers were there who were getting rich. This was the population of Corinth. Now let me ask you, when you have all these people in one place, what else do you have? You say, well, crime, bad stuff. True. I'm going for a deeper answer. Pride. There sits that man in church who was a freed slave. He won his freedom. He has pulled himself up by his bootstraps. Don't you try to move him. Don't you tell him, excuse me, because he will cuss you out. That's what he used to be, but now he is no longer a slave. He has a sense of pride. Who else sits there? That army veteran. He can see bruises and cuts and stitches all over him. Pride. There sits that family over there. Their roots are deep. Man, they go all the way back to Philip of Macedon. They're sitting there too. Unlike all of you, we were the original. Who else is there? That fellow with a lot of money, that laborer, that foreman, all these people. And you had a sense of pride. The pride that was in Corinth now was in the church. And it was threatening to destroy the unity of the body. Sounds like a church, doesn't it? Pride had come into, and Paul had to address this. Listen to how he opens the letter to the Corinthians. Chapter 1, verse 26. He says, now listen very carefully how he addresses them. He says, "For you see your calling, brethren, that not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called." Now, think with me for a moment. If someone were to write a letter to Clearview and say, "Keep in mind, smart people, strong people, and noble people are not in church," what would you say? Did you just insult us? Did you just tell us that we're a bunch of ignorant, weak, degenerate people? Paul is being sarcastic. He is being in their face. He is saying, just keep in mind that wise, mighty, noble are not called. He says, "But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to put to shame the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to put to shame the things which are mighty, and the base things of the world and the things which are despised God has chosen." Folks, this is not a compliment. He is telling them, you think you are somebody, but keep in mind, God calls the nobody. Apparently, you must be the nobodies. What is the purpose of all this, Paul? That no flesh should glory in his presence. You know what pride is? Pride is forgetting where we came from and self-glorying in God's presence. What does the Bible say? God hates the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. God doesn't hate the sinner, but he will hate the person who says, "I am somebody because of look where I've come from. Look, I pulled myself by my bootstrap. Look, I'm better than them, better than her. I know more Bible. I've been through stuff in life. I tell you what, it'll blow your mind what I've been through." You know what? At the root of all that is pride. So let me ask you this morning before we get into the message, kind of a tricky question. Do you have a pride problem? Now be careful how you answer. If you say you don't, you see, pride is an equal opportunity employer. It infects non-Christians as well as Christians. It infects the rich as well as the poor. You know, I've been lived overseas. I've been in America. I've been all over the world. You know what I found? I've found more proud poor people than rich people. It blows your mind. You say, "Oh no, the rich are so full." Not necessarily. There are some, but many times is the one who may have nothing in his pocket but a sense of pride. Let me tell you who I am. Pride has killed more marriages, has destroyed more friendships, divided more churches, and sabotaged more hope than anything else. Would you agree? It is pride that says, "I am not budging. You know what? If that means I'm wrong, fine. I'll be wrong, but at least I'm not going to change my mind." How many business meetings end that way? And it destroys hope. And the question I ask every week, are you saved? Why do I ask every week that question? Because refusing to be saved is saying that you don't need God. You are good enough. That Jesus died on the cross for the rest of those sinners, but you're okay. I don't need being saved. Now, I've been in church all my life, and I pray daily, and I read the Bible just as much as anybody. I may not know as much as you think, or maybe I don't know as much, but I tell you, me and God are good. You're lost, and God hates it. I'm praying this morning, not only would you learn something new about love, but you would also leave your pride behind and come to Him today. I'll repeat that statement again, that verse, God hates the proud, but He gives grace to the humble. God is willing to give you grace, not if you say, "I'm good enough." So let's begin by examining the words that Paul gives in this statement. Why am I using the board? Keep us awake. That's all. Love does not parade itself, is not puffed up. That's the statement we're going to look at now. What does it mean? Love does not parade itself. You know, there is no such statement in the Bible. Actually, the Greek word is parperuotai. This is the only time it is found in the New Testament Greek. Only time, one more time, is found outside in the secular literature. It has the idea of bragging by talking a lot about oneself. If I were to write up here, it would be pride with words. It comes from the Greek word parperos. Now, it's my opinion. It's my opinion that if you listen to that word carefully, parperos, something is being repeated. Parper, parperos, parper. Have you ever heard the word murmur? Yeah, I went over there. She was murmuring under her breath. What does that mean to murmur? Murmur, murmur. You're just like, you know, grumbling over here. Or barbarian. Who is a barbarian? Somebody who just berber. They're not sophisticated enough to speak properly. They're just barbarian. Barber. Parperos is something, I believe, this is my opinion, it's like someone who is repeating things about themselves. And after a while, it just sounds like obnoxious sound. Sometime back, I was at a meeting, and the one who was leading the meeting asked this question and gave us a chance to kind of interact and talk about what we thought about what he was saying. And this one gentleman took the floor, and he began talking. Every statement was prefaced with, "Let me tell you who I am. Y'all going to learn something about me. The kind of person I am, and when you get to know me," initially it was good. Initially it was like, oh, okay, yeah, this so-and-so has energy. After a while it was like, are you going to say anything just to say, or are you going to preface everything with how great you are? So I had this look on my face like, so you know how we do, but from the corner of my eye, I began to look and see what other people were thinking. Sure enough, everybody had the same smirk on their face, like, glad we came to hear you, brother. Because now we know how good you are and how pathetic the rest of us are. You know, the problem with this gentleman was, he was a wonderful man, but unintentionally, he had become a parperos. We were simply hearing the same sound, the same noise being repeated about himself. It was pride with words. In the Corinthian culture, this was kind of normal. You had to do that. I mean, you can take one look at you. You must be a slave. Let me tell you the kind of things. I used to work with Caesar. That's right. I was Caesar's slave. But I tell you what, I did everything for him. I knew more about the household than he did. You had to do that in the Corinthian culture, but unfortunately, that was contrary to the church culture. In the church, it's not about I, it's about you. It's about the Lord. And because this pride with words was coming into the church, it was destroying the unity of the body. Love was dying out. It is very hard to love others when you're busy telling them why they should love you. Pride with words. Love does not parade itself. Love is not parperos. Love is not pride with words. What is the next statement? What does it say? Love is not puffed up. The Greek word is phusiotai. Phusiotai. It literally means to blow up, to puff up, or to inflate. It is found 6 times in this letter. This was a real problem. The idea is of someone being full of pride and self-importance, but not necessarily with words. This is pride without words. Pride with words. Talk, talk, talk about who you are, what you've been through, what no one understands about you, if they only knew this. Pride without words is no words are coming out, but other people can tell. You are full of yourself. Again, sometime back, I met this young lady who was with a young man I knew. And as I was talking to him, I realized that she had this don't care to be here look on her face. Anybody ever seen that? They're like, they just don't want to be here. She had this attitude. And so I thought it must be because, you know, she's in a new place, she doesn't know me, and we're having a conversation, she just left, you know, like a third wheel. So I kind of turned to her and I said, so where are you from? And she gave me a very terse, one-word answer, the name of this town. So I said, oh, there's someone right here I know who is, and she immediately cut me off and said, yeah, I heard that already. She was sending me a message that, I am not interested in prolonging this conversation. Please leave me alone. What do you think I did? What would you do? All right. But guess what I did? I began to watch her. I saw her get her little plate of food and sit down in the corner, and she had her phone, and she began to go through it. But she had a look of disdain in her eyes towards everybody around her. Guess also what I noticed? Everybody left her alone. You say, why did they leave her alone? Because she was sending a message without words, without sound, but people were hearing her loud and clear. You know what she was telling them? I am better than you. Please don't come near. Did you know that in the Corinthian culture, this was also kind of normal? Sometimes you have to use words, man. You have to put yourself out there. By the way, nothing wrong with that. Sometimes you have to put yourself out there. Sometimes you have to explain to people who you are or they won't know. But pride is when it's all about you. In the Corinthian culture, there was also pride without words, where you walk into a room and people know he must be a big shot. She must be from that rich family. Unfortunately, this attitude was also getting into the church, where this was not right. You see, in the church, you have to put aside your pride, make yourself vulnerable, and reach out to people. And this attitude of pride without words, puffed up, was killing the unity. Now listen again. It is very hard to love others when you are busy telling them that you are too good for them. People can do that in various ways. You can do that with Bible knowledge too. Did you know that? You can just give that air that you are deep in the Word. You have a deeper walk with God. You are so much more a man or a woman of prayer. Guess what people do? They back off. Sometimes pride struts around and everyone can see it. Other times it struts sitting down and everyone can sense it. The solution, the answer is pride with words has to, what do you have to do here? You have to step back. How about pride without words has to step up? And the common purpose in doing this, to serve. Love cannot exist if there is pride with words or pride without words. The goal is to serve. Now, how does God do this? How does God love us? God has set the perfect example of this, and Paul tells them, starting in verse 25, chapter 1 of Corinthians. He makes a statement that almost sounds blasphemous. The foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. You know, I don't understand everything about the Bible, and this is one of those passages that still baffle me. What is Paul saying? To understand what he is saying, you have to read three previous verses. Now, I'm going to read them to you, and I want you to really pay attention. Verse 22, for Jews request a sign, and Greeks seek after wisdom. We preach Christ crucified, to the Jews a stumbling block, and to the Greeks foolishness, but to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God. And then he says, the foolishness of God is wiser than men and the weakness of God is stronger than men. What Paul is saying to the Corinthians is this. You think you are smart. You think you're strong. You think you're noble. Don't you know that Jesus Christ on the cross became a fool and a weakling for you? Don't you realize that He put His pride with words aside and His pride without words aside? He stepped back and stepped up and He came to serve you. Don't you see that God became a fool for you and God became weak for you? What right do you have to have this? While the Corinthians were strutting and puffing in pride, Jesus was willing to become a servant and die on the cross. You know, the model for humility is not me or you or some uncle or some grandmother. The model for humility is Jesus Christ. He's set His power, His authority aside, and He came down for us. Remember Philippians 2? Who being in the form of God did not consider it robbery to be equal with God, but made Himself of no reputation, taking the form of a servant, bond servant. Why? Because He loves us. Did you know that 1 Corinthians 13, you can pretty much take the word love out and put the word Christ in? Let me read it to you. How about that? Christ suffers long and is kind. Christ does not envy. Christ does not parade itself. Christ is not puffed up. That's really the message. Now, how should we love each other? Paul doesn't just say, okay, look to Christ. He said, look to me too. Listen to 1 Corinthians chapter 2. He says, I was with you in weakness, in fear, and in much trembling. Folks, Paul was from Tarsus. Tarsus was kind of like almost like a college town. This was the place where Stoic philosophy was at its height. Paul was trained in rhetoric. He was trained in Greek philosophy. He was not a clueless Jewish person walking around going, I don't know, this is Athens. I guess this is Athens. He knew everything that was happening. Not only that, but he was also trained in Jewish law. He studied under Gamaliel. Gamaliel would be like a Harvard professor. But he says, Corinthians, when I came to you, I came in weakness and fear and trembling. I could have come and prove myself, I didn't do that. Why didn't you do that, Paul? Listen to what else he says. And my speech and my preaching were not with persuasive words of human wisdom, but in demonstration of the Spirit and of power, that your faith should not be in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. He said, I did all that. I came down. I stepped back. I stepped up to serve you so that you will not believe in me. You would believe in Jesus. Another verse. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 9, Paul says, for though I am free from all men, I have made myself a servant to all that I might win the more. Paul could have been full of pride, with words, without words, but he gave it up and he served, became a servant. Why? So they would be saved. Let me ask you this morning, how do you see those around you? Do you see them the way Jesus sees you? Are you willing to serve others the way Paul served the Corinthians? What do you think will happen in a marriage when a husband and a wife, instead of trying to get one up on the other, they begin to serve each other? What would happen in a church? Instead of posturing with each other, we actually become servants. You know what Jesus did on the night of His crucifixion? Knowing that He came from God, He was going to God, He picked up the basin of water and He washed the feet of His disciples. What did He say? If I, being your master, have done this to you, now you go do that to others. You know what He was saying to them? The conversation was, who is the greatest? Who is the next in line to be the leader? And He said, put all this aside, serve. And today, if you're saying, well, I know who needs to hear this, you need to hear this. Now, here are some objections. I know someone's bound to say, hey, listen, I'm just an extrovert. I like people. I can't help it. You know, if you're that person, here's the thing. It's all right to be outgoing. Just don't talk about yourself all the time. It's all right to be the one who reaches out and says, hey, how are you? Step back a little bit and let them talk. Love does not parade itself. Let them share. Be listening intently. Don't just look through them for the next. And I know you can't just sit there and give your time to just one person the whole day. It's impossible, especially if you're at a party or a business luncheon or whatever. You can't do that. But at least for that moment, give that person that sense of service that you are there to serve them. You just listen to them. By the way, did you know that this is in the business world too? They tell you that all the time. Hey, listen with your eyes. It tells you that. I'm just an introvert. That's just my purpose. I've always been an introvert. I'm not going to ask y'all to raise your hand because the church is full of them. It's all right to be a quiet personality, but I'm about to step on your toes too. It's a whole different thing when you have an air of superiority that says, if you want to talk to me, you get off your butt and make your way over here because I'm not coming there. So many of us do that, don't we? I'm just an introvert. What it's really saying is, you make yourself uncomfortable because I'm worth it. If you don't think so, forget it, because I'm not coming there. You know, at the heart of being an introvert is pride. Here's a totally different question. How do you see those who are proud? Now, we talked about being proud and how you need to be humble. How do you see people who are proud? Remember, I gave you two illustrations in the opening. One, the guy who was talking about himself, and the girl who was, you know, didn't care to talk to me and had that. Would you like to know who was more proud? I was, because I sat in judgment over him and over her. You see, pride is so subtle, isn't it? Just when you think you don't have it, you have it. Many years ago, I heard a preacher give this illustration. I heard it many, many times. You know, like they gave a pin to this fellow. He was so humble. And we even say humble. That's not right, by the way. It is humble. He is such an humble person. But they took the pin away when he put it on. Pride is so subtle. Just when you think, I don't have it, you're the one. Dietrich Bonhoeffer lived in Nazi Germany. He was a theologian, very smart man. He even came to America. He taught here. Hitler was coming in power, and they told him, don't go back home. Stay here. It's very bad. He said, no, my people need me. I'm going back. And he did go back. And he led a clandestine movement, a secret church, because Hitler had shaken hands with the established church, and it was Hitler's church now. And he even was part of a plan to assassinate him. The Gestapo got him, threw him into the concentration camp, and eventually killed him. He wrote many books, but this is one of my favorite books. It's called Life Together. Many statements worth quoting, but there's one that I think applies to our message today. He who is bearing others, you know, that fellow who was running his mouth talking about I am this and I'm that, I was bearing with him. You know, we were bearing with his pride with words. He who is bearing others, like that woman who, that girl who shut me off, I was bearing with her pride. He who is bearing others knows that he himself is being born. Not born, like birth. Don't forget, God is bearing with you. And only in this strength can he go on bearing. How can we even serve those who are full of pride with words and pride without words when you remember somebody is serving you? And who is that somebody? Jesus Christ. God is. Love and pride cannot coexist. With words, without words.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Sometimes, to show love, you have to step back. Other times, you have to step up. But the goal is to serve. Just the way Christ came into this world to be a bondservant. For more information, please visit us online at clearviewbc.org. And for today's sermon notes, my blog site at abidonshaw.com.